This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by the Honorable Doug LaMalfa. He represents the 1st Congressional District of California, member of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committees, and also the House Ag Committee. Great to see you.
Good to be here.
Let's talk about the 1st District of California. We'll find rice there, will we not?
Yeah, big time. There's over 500,000 acres of rice grown in California. First District has a big chunk of it.
And what else will we find? Livestock, other row crops?
Yeah, my first district's the northeast corner of the state. It touches Oregon and Nevada in that corner up there. It's 11 counties. So you got a lot of high country there, people growing a lot of hay and grass crops up that way. And, of course, timbers are extremely important. Mining is very important for, we have cement mines and, of course, in the old days, gold mines, because what California with its gold reputation. And get down more into the valley, you have a lot of tree crops, peaches, almonds, walnuts. We say almonds out there, by the way. Prunes or, there's pecans around. There's a little of everything. And then, a lot of rice. There's wheat here and there. We're not big on wheat. We don't quite have soil types everywhere. You got to have a lighter soil. So, just in the first district, there's a lot of wine grapes nowadays. People think of the wine country being a little more south and west of me by Napa and Sonoma County, but we're pretty successful with a lot of wine grape growers doing kind of boutique wineries, growing some of the varieties that are a little more hardy in hotter areas, So there's not a lot of Merlot and Cabernet grown there, but maybe some of your Pinot Noir and some of those types.
We talk about one of the challenges that the state is facing. One is drought. How has that affected the first district, and is that a concern moving forward?
Well, the results can happen anywhere in the country and the world with drought being what that is, but we have drought, and then we have man-caused problems with how you manage water. Because, you get some precipitation every year. You have some water runoff, but we let so much water as a state, as state policymakers and federal, because of environmental concerns, which I think are misapplied. And so we let so much water go out, what's known as the delta that feeds into the Bay Area on out to the ocean. So much water goes out every day that they believe is going to help fish. It's going to help with what they call saltwater intrusion, pushing back up from the bay more into the delta and affecting fish habitat up there. So much is bent towards fish habitat these days. And in this time of drought, you got to remember that in 2019 and 2017, our reservoirs are pretty much topped off. 2019, everything was full. 2017, as you may recall from the news, is the time that the spillway broke on Oroville Dam, which I can see from my front window practically. And there was that giant issue there. Was the dam going to be affected by the spillway breakage? And so that made national news. But that was the year that the lake filled. It was actually filled over the top, over the emergency spillway, and it broke the main spillway, So that's been repaired. So there's no reason not to fill our lakes, and there's no reason. There's a hot debate right now in D.C. about infrastructure, and this is the type of thing we need to be building. Infrastructure always suffers from competition for other, spending priorities in Washington, D.C., and in my home state. People think infrastructure seems to be something we can borrow from the future on or put off till later. So when you have, the right lane on the freeway, which is the one where the trucks go, is all torn up, or when you have not enough lanes and traffic starts stacking up, or you don't have enough water supply because we don't plan like we did back in the old days, let's say when the state water project was built in the late 50s and the 60s for California, and the federal one called the CVP, Central Valley Project, was built in the 30s and 40s. We used to plan for these things. We used to plan for a growing population. Now we're shut down by environmental concerns that are, I think, pretty misplaced, because the end results has not shown that endangered species have recovered at more than like a 2 or 3% rate. So all this effort we're making, and it's not really helping. Then we can get into climate change. Well, what is climate change? It really boils down to the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere is what – a lot of people around here are pinning that on. So you might be surprised to know that, unless those that really pay attention, our atmosphere is made up of 0.04% of carbon dioxide. A lot of people, you ask them, oh, it's 30, 40%. No, 0.04%. And the change in CO2 over the last 30 years has only been from a 0.03-something, 0.035 to 0.036, 0.004%. And so we're doing headstands in this country and all over the world. It's scaring the heck out of people over CO2. Oh, my gosh, climate change. And it's almost a rounding error in the elements of our atmosphere. Okay? Now, methane gas, that's a little more of an issue, things like that. But we're finding ways to utilize it. So we get right down to what's going to affect agriculture and putting food on people's table is these regulations. And it's the endless lawsuits over doing basic things that, you know, it's not like this is 1850 or something where we haven't learned from environmental errors or things that we could have, you know, back in the days we used to cut every tree and kill all the buffalo and take giant hydraulic apparatus to gold mine and knock down entire mountains. And they haven't done that stuff in a long time. You know, we're more environmentally conscious than ever. And I'd submit that farmers, ranchers, are some of the leading stewards of the land and of the conservation efforts. Same with our foresters, you know. USDA oversees the United States Forest Service, and I'm part of that committee that does that. That's a really frustrating entity there in their lack of speed with which they're managing the land. So we burned 4 million acres last year in California, 4.2 million acres. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And so when we have these debates around here, infrastructure needs to happen. What should come out of an infrastructure bill is not what some of the on the other side of the aisle are calling. They're calling child care infrastructure. They're calling every social program. We already have a battle, as I was mentioning, with the infrastructure competing for dollars with all the other social spending or with defense spending or with other forms of spending. It's hard to keep these dollars focused on building highways or adding to water storage or repairing levees, you know, like they face in the southern states with like Louisiana and all these other things. Infrastructure really means, you know, building hard things that last a long time that help with flood control, moving products down a freeway, or storing water, things of that nature. And so that's the battle. I'm disappointed the way the current debate is going on infrastructure here because they want to throw everything else, including the kitchen sink, into it on top of all the other types of spending that are not infrastructure here.
Do we need to throw broadband into that, though?
That's been a hot topic with in our ag committee right in this room here, including that in the farm bill. And it's gotten a bigger share each farm bill. We'll be doing another farm bill in 23. And so I think it's going to be a hotter and hotter topic as we keep going. It's very important for especially rural America, you know, so we can be competitive on for our education system, for our healthcare system. You know, when you have the ability to run tests at a rural hospital, a rural clinic, you may not always have the technicians that can read the charts, read the x-rays, read the scans there, but you don't necessarily have to. You can take these, you can use this technology with broadband if you have a high enough speed to send that somewhere else where they can examine these scans, what have you, and send back the results and say, here's what we saw. Your patient should do this or should do that. Maybe at that point your patient does have to go to a more specialized center, or maybe it's something they can handle locally. The more we do the technology and upgrade the technology, the more possibilities we could have in smaller towns and more rural areas. And so, you know, part of that, too, is getting the personnel that want to live there. And so that brings the ability, you know, what a lot of people look for is quality of life. And for a lot of them, it's defined by what's the education system, what's the healthcare system like in an area they might seek to move to or move an industry to, you know. So we, in rural California, we're interested in having these same opportunities as are in these densely packed urban areas. You know, more light industry could be moving to my district instead of being all crammed together down in the Bay Area and the Silicon Valley where they need to, you know, build more chips. I mean, we have a chip shortage, not potato chip, the chips that you would use for the different types of electronics. We can't get pickups. I stopped at one of my auto dealers the other day. They can't get vehicles because there's a shortage of chips, for crying out loud. Why aren't we making those in America? Why aren't we making those from a reliable supply? And we're way too dependent on China for too many things, including some of our export market. Now, our almond folks, they were over the barrel here not too long ago because of dealing with China. But I think President Trump was trying really hard to restore a trade balance, and we were moving that direction on some of the on trade and ag. And, you know, we need continuity to keep doing things right like that.
Final question here for you. Mm-hmm. We have a thing called the Farm Bill. Reauthorize it about every 5 years or so.
Yeah, unless we're late.
we've had some challenges as of late getting it across the finish line, especially in the House, as we start mm-hmm. the process of a 2023 Farm Bill. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you think needs to have we need to have as a priority in that Farm Bill that maybe we haven't spent enough time on in the past, or we just need to strengthen some part of it?
Well, you know, I've been here for about 8.5 years now, so I've had several chairmen of the committee here. Frank Lucas was really great when I first got here, and Mike Conaway from Texas was one of the lead formulators of the last Farm Bill as well. And we had many, many hearings. And then, you know, then the House changed, and Mr. Peterson, he was a good man to work with from Minnesota as well. But it got politicized, especially this last time around. You know, the Speaker, I think they just didn't want to give an inch on certain things it needed to do to morph the Farm Bill in a direction it needs to go. And the interesting piece of the Farm Bill is that what is called the Farm Bill, 80% of it is not the farm. About 20% of it is actually the farm programs. 80% of it is, a big part of that is what's the SNAP program, or it used to be called the food stamp program. And, you know, it has its merits, but we're always, as part of government, a big part of our job is oversight, making sure that when a program is created, that we're looking back on it once in a while, too, to make sure the ship is going in the right direction. And so tweaks we've talked about on the food stamp program is making sure that people should be eligible are the ones receiving the benefit. Because if it's going to the people it shouldn't, then that hurts the ones that should. And overall, this is still a taxpayer thing. So just about everybody watching, I'm sure, is a taxpayer. And you have the right to ask us, how are the taxpayer dollars being spent? Because they're hard to keep as well. You know, I mean, IRS is relentless. You know, it's funny when I hear taxes around here called contributions. Contribution implies they're voluntary. And taxation is not voluntary. Somebody shows up with handcuffs or an auctioneer or something to take what you have if you're not paying in. So we have to be good stewards of that. We have to be respectful of people's hard work. You know, I have a farm myself, and we farm rice in Northern California. We have about 500,000 acres total grown in the state, less this year because the water's down. And so, you know, my kids are the fifth generation, and that's an important legacy for us, and I'm sure for all of your watchers and listeners that are in the ag field as well. And so we got to get back to what's real here. And there's a lot of missed reality, you know. We're seeing a lot of people get giddy over, we need to have carbon sequestration on farms. What does that mean? You know, does that mean everybody no-tills? I can't no-till on my rice business, you know, because you want the carbon to stay in the ground. Well, remember, carbon, what was the amount? 0.04% of the atmosphere, okay? There's a lot of hysteria. It's almost a religion around here. Half the speeches I hear on the floor and committee, and what are we going to do about climate change? Well, God does more about climate change than I think mankind ever could, you know. And we have a lot of other countries that aren't doing anything about anything. So why is the U.S. going to be the only one that's painting ourselves into a corner, trying to do something that's probably virtually impossible if you really measured it on a fair scale? We're always doing things better. You know, our trucks and tractors run cleaner, and our cars run cleaner than ever. Our power plants, you know, using the miracle of hydraulic fracturing so much as on natural gas, which is a really clean burning product. Why aren't we doing more nuclear power? California has two nuclear plants. One got shut down about 7 years ago, and they're going to shut down the other one here in 24, 25. They got two different reactors. They're going to shut them down. That's another 8% of California's power grid just shut down because they want to do it that way. And so where are you going to replace that in electricity from? Especially when there's this hell-bent effort to make every car electric-powered instead of fuel-powered, okay? Where's all this come from? It just makes very little sense to me. You know, you're not going to... Am I going to have a Prius trying to haul around my fertilizer in my ranch here or something instead of an F-250? It just doesn't... It doesn't add up. And I hope your viewers and I hope the Americans that watch and like to eat get a real dose of reality on this too. And it really comes down to elections, right? Who's holding the gavel in that chair back there is decided by which party they're in and who's sitting down the street in the White House and what executive orders they sign and put all of us through as producers. You know, the water is being just taken away from us right now in California. There's growers that were promised an allocation at the beginning of the year of 5%. Then they said, we're going to take that 5% from you. Up in there's a place called the Klamath Basin where they're dealing with a fish issue up there. And they're last year we were able to help at the last minute save 40% of their water. This year, cutting it all. I mean, how do you take somebody's asset and cut it in half or down to even to zero and expect them to do business? You know, some are going to replace it with wells. State of California, of course, it has new regulations on how they're going to track well water, and soon they'll be taxing you on that and requiring you to get a permit for that. A permit implies you have to get permission, and when somebody has the power to give you permission, they have the power to take it away. So, you know, a lot of challenges here right now, and so we really need the American people to figure out where things come from. It doesn't just come from a grocery store or another country or a container from China. That's a loser big time. And so, you know, as we're trying to export our products that we grow overseas, and we can't even get containers because they leave so fast after they've dumped a load of Chinese stuff off of, you know, who knows what. And they don't make any money sending it back. We got a lot of job to do with foreign trade and international relations.
And you talk about the shipping containers. That's a whole nother subject. But yeah, that may be a conversation for next time. Will you come back and join us sometime?
Love to.
Great to visit with you. The Honorable Doug LaMalfa, representing the 1st Congressional District of California on today's Agribusiness Report.